Each month after the council meeting, as you probably know, I have a chat with Mayor Sam Copeland in the studio, but there's been a bit of a break because we've had a council election, and Sam, you're back as mayor.
I am, yes. We had the council election in September. The new council was sworn in the 4th of October. So we've got six returning councillors and three new councillors in what's a reduced council from 11 down to 9.
And I should congratulate you and your team. As I say, you're back as mayor, Councillor Redwood back as deputy. I guess that's a pretty nice vote of confidence from the people and your fellow councillors after the first term.
We were unopposed on the day, so I guess we'll take that as a vote of confidence, yes.
I think you can. So what changes might we, ratepayers, citizens of Armidale, see in the second term? Do you have an agenda, any big items you're looking at?
I would, and this was at the recent council meeting, we put up a mayoral minute and tweaked that. There was a little bit of hoo-ha about what that meant. But the first order of business at the council meeting last night was to try and set the goalposts, which is to continue the growth trajectory, because a new term of council, and this is a full term of council, has the opportunity to radically change direction. We could tear up the local strategic planning statement, you know, the growth path towards 50,000 people. We could abandon the housing strategy. We could decide that genuine water security was just all too difficult. And we could decide not to be activators in the community and shrink our way to success. So that, you know, that was an option. And there were certainly some people during the election campaign who were advocating that very thing.
And it has been an option in other spheres of politics as well. But the other thing, of course, you can do is you've had a term, you've settled in, you've learned an enormous amount, I guess, about engaging with the community, what the community is interested in, what they like, what they don't like. So it can be an opportunity for new initiatives, can't it?
Look, it can, and I guess we've got three new councillors. We've got a different perspectives coming across as well. You know, you talk about community engagement. That's something that happens at the beginning of every council term as well, in a very formal sense. We go out, used to be called the Community Strategic Plan, but it's now called the Community Plan.
Can I say the election is perhaps the first community engagement in one way, isn't it?
Look, it is. And we are a representative democracy. I think some members of the community end up forgetting that, and certainly some of the elected representatives, I think, if we're being honest, forget that we are a representative democracy. You are elected by the community to represent them, and that often means making the difficult decisions rather than putting everything out to a community vote. The election was the ultimate performance review, but it was also the ultimate, mandate or direction from the community as well.
I think so. Now, you mentioned that the mayoral minute, and in it you refer to the region of significance. What's a region of significance? obviously, Armidale is one.
Obviously, well, I think Armidale used to be, or certainly thinks it is, or thought it was. Look, to me, a region of significance is one that attracts people. It has that gravitational pull. It attracts people who want to live here. It attracts jobs, and it attracts government investment. So when state government is looking to expand things, trial things, spend money, I want them to look at our region. And to do that, you actually have to be on that growth trajectory. So that was largely what it was about. It was recommitting to the plans already done by that previous council. And as I mentioned before, being regional activators. So there were four bullet points to that particular minute. There was committing to the strategic planning statement, the housing strategy, committing to providing genuine water security, not just pretend water security or saying you're doing it but not. And that's going to require some difficult decisions. Investment and reverse trade missions were key to that. The Big Chill Festival, so to committing to that for the four-year term, because the government funding has finished. It's in the budget for this year, but we wanted to signal to the community that we are regional activators. And the final one was to have a workshop from councillors, to of all of us, to be able to put our ideas on the wall and wherever possible that they feed into the delivery plan.
A number of people have spoken with to me about public transport, and they're not really so much talking about, and I think this partly comes out of the rail trail conversations, not necessarily just transport in Armidale so much as how easy it is to get to Guyrick, Glenannis, Inverell, that there is a loop there. Do you have anything in mind for transport for the region? Because I think that can be part of a region of significance.
It can, but you have to have sufficient size for the state government to be able to provide those services. And you also have to have sufficient size for the private operators
because
to step
of costs,
in.
Basically.
Because of cost. So we have spoken to Transport for New South Wales about bus services around, and they're, you know, always in the plans, et cetera, et cetera. For council to provide those is just unrealistic.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting council do it, but I'm just reporting what I hear.
Yeah, it's one of these, everyone's got great ideas, no one's prepared to pay for anything. And that may not be entirely true. People are prepared to pay, you know, what is considered fair amount for public transport.
And the
but it
thing,
obviously
of course,
means
people
subsidy.
Will talk about things, but will they support it if it actually happens? And that's often the other side of that
well,
coin,
that's,
isn't
in,
it?
In a way, part of being a region of significance, you do need that certain size for even simple things like for a restaurant to open and remain viable. If we're a region that we only go, you know, we'll only frequent a particular restaurant two or three times a year, with a small population, that's not viable. Much larger population where people will frequent the restaurant two or three times a year, it does become viable. Similarly, if there's going to be a bus service, a loop from, you know, Armidale to Guyra to Glen Innes out to Inverell and back, then
it needs patrons.
It needs patrons, yeah.
Orange seems to have done this well, don't they? Becoming a region of significance. I mean, we all, I think, in the back of our mind have a sense of Orange being a destination, food, produce, and they're a bigger population, I think. But
they are. They're about 10,000 bigger than we are. They also have a lot of sizable towns around them as well, which helps. You know, Bathurst is only half an hour away, which is, you know, bigger again. And then you know, go another hour and a bit up the hill and you're in the Blue Mountains. And then so being 3 hours from Sydney helps a lot. But, you know, temperature-wise, we're on par. We're 2 hours further. And yeah, it's about, you know, they've diversified their income a lot. They do have a genuine mine in that Cadia gold mine. They have the government has invested significantly in terms of putting government departments there, and you know that really is. And I had a little bit of a blue with Tara Moriarty, the Minister for Regional New South Wales, when I was talking to her about what's she going to do for the regions. And it was a whole bunch of, you know, it was the most sloppy presentation I've ever heard from a politician. But I was really pushing, and I said to her, the best thing a government can do is to decentralise departments, send them to the regions.
Provide employment.
But high,
you and I both know
jobs.
That there's always this cycle in governments, and we'll move on, but that between centralisation and decentralisation, that just seems to be a continual loop, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I learned something recently about our council procedures. If there is a casual vacancy caused by a councillor resigning or leaving the role for whatever reason within 18 months from the previous election, the position is filled by countback of votes cast at the previous election. No by-election, obviously a more cost-effective approach, but was that always the way or is this a new idea?
No, it was always the way. I recall that came up in the last term that was mentioned where we pretty much knew if anyone, you know, dropped dead or was found in bed with a scandal and had to leave for family reasons, you know, who the next first reserve was.
Yeah, so no by-election at council level.
No by-election. And actually, this is really pertinent because in Glen Innes, the fellow Rob Banham, who was the mayor, when he wasn't re-elected mayor at their first council meeting, resigned at 5 p.m. that afternoon, effective immediately. So they're actually doing a countback. They're running the results again as though he weren't a candidate.
Yes.
And so we'll see how it
and that's
falls
what,
out.
That's what I saw, and that and it intrigued me. And I think I'm bringing it up, and it may sound small to some people, but I think it's important from a perspective of civics and that sort of thing, that people understand how their councils work. So I just thought I'd say no by-election, count that.
And I think there is a bit towards the end, if let's say you're 6 months out from an election, then it just stays
as it is.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Armidale Regional Council General Manager James Roncom announced his resignation from the role on Tuesday, October the 5th. Now, apart from the fact that that probably means there'll be one smaller podcast out on the internet, who's going to take over the GM's delegation until a new candidate is appointed?
Yeah, that's it. Look, that's a biggie. That's something that we will end up probably voting on in December. So it would likely be from one of the internal staff, ideally. Otherwise, we'll have to seek an interim GM from the market, which, you know, there's a few around. Even the fellows who have been administrators, say, of New England Weeds Authority could step in and do that role. So there's a, there's a number of options. Because I suspect filling James' role, well, A, very big shoes to fill. This will be one of the most significant decisions that this council has to make, who's going to lead the council. James is a very, very effective leader. I've already had a couple of delegations, and there are more in my calendar of staff coming to see me about specifically what they want, what made James unique. There'd be, 20, 30, 40 people out there with his CV, but it's what's not on the CV that's the point of difference, that secret sauce. So it's up to us to try and find somebody who has that secret sauce.
So you'll go to market for a GM sometime in the near future, but we'll talk about it in December, I think you're telling me.
No, not necessarily. The process of going for a GM, because I thought you were asking me there about an interim.
Yes,
I don't think he will be James. We won't have an appointment, I don't imagine, until the end of 30 June at the earliest.
No, I was interested in the interim and how that works. I'm going to read you a couple of documents or sections of a couple of documents. Going back to James Roncom, in a previous press release, he said, and I'm quoting, "The e-scooter trial was one of many council initiatives to be delivered through council's brilliant region strategy to build a platform of digital capabilities," and that refers to the Beam scooters. Now, Brisbane City Council has cancelled its contract with e-scooter company Beam after a tip from a whistleblower suggested it had significantly underreported the size of its fleet. The council will refer Beam to Australia's corporate watchdog and potentially the police, alleging the company owes $330,000 in unpaid fees and exceeded safety caps by nearly a third in the 12 months to July. That's last July, an average of 500 undeclared services a day. Council's investigation found that the company had systemically exceeded its scooter cap. Brisbane City Council Transport Chair Ryan Murphy said several Australian councils have been tipped off about the data anomalies, and we have spent the last month investigating the investigations. We've found significant breaches of the device kept by Beam, a systemic program. That was over 222,000 occasions between July 23 and July 24 where they did not report all hireable services. Auckland City Council has referred Beam to New Zealand police, alleging the company has found a way to sidestep the city's safety cap and run a fleet far larger than its licence allowed. Wellington City Council has suspended the company's licence for the same reason. My question to you then is, and believe me, everybody, this was not something we discussed previously, so I'm just really throwing this at you. Has Armidale Council had any concerns or been aware of other councils' concerns around Beam?
No, so every council that you read out there was not in New South Wales.
Correct.
So in New South Wales, e-scooters are illegal. So what we had here in Armidale was a trial, and so because when that popped up on the news, I was quite intrigued when I saw it, which was about a week after the 12-month trial finished here in Armidale. So all of our scooters had gone. So what they must be doing with the other councils is they have to pay the council a fee on a per scooter basis to operate in that region, and you know, clearly there are limits on how many scooters a council would want in the region. What we had was totally different. It was a trial to aid with New South Wales developing legislation around e-scooters. 12-month trial. Beam were the people who provided it, so there was no financial relationship between council and Beam. Council didn't earn any money, nor did it pay any money. It was simply a trial site that was chosen by the New South Wales government.
But I guess, and that's all true, but I guess the shakeout of what I just read is that there may be, well, it may speak to the operating processes and practices of the company, and it may be something to be aware of should we move forward with Beam in the future, after the legislation is enacted.
Sure, but I suspect Beam have blotted their copybook in Australia and New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So...
End of story.
Yeah, well, pretty much end of story. I mean, we can theorise conspiratorially, but
that's not my approach, as you know, though. I'm just purely putting facts on the table and the experiences of other councils.
I was in Christchurch at the weekend, and I have both a Beam app, obviously, because I was here in Armidale and Lyme. There were no Beam scooters in Christchurch, but I zipped around. I think I took about 4 or 5 trips on a Lime scooter. Still a brilliant way to get around.
Mm, all right. Now, you know, I've been following the Durrington Weeds Authority debacle with some interest. And again, back to James Roncom, got his finger on everything, it seems. Provided council with an update on the Durrington Weeds Authority. Can you tell us about that? Have we learnt anything new, or was he just reporting on the things you and I have discussed pretty much?
There was something new that came out of it. So the administrator is still in the process of winding the business up. They got a fellow to come in, and this was in the confidential, or the report was in the confidential session, really just to liaise amongst all of the councils, etc., about what the preferred ongoing model is. And because no council wanted to be the lead council in the lead council model, it was all downside.
Remember
none
you
of the
saying
upside.
That? Yes.
Every council is now going to go on its, you know, take its own path with maintaining biosecurity services. So we will pick up, I'd say, 3 or 4 employees and a spray rig.
And this is important for the farming community and for scrub fires and all sorts of things, because we don't think about it, but one of their very important roles is just to maintain the road edge out in the bush.
Yeah, that's right. And there's contract spraying that can be done. There's a lot of contractors out there. So anyway, we'll have some new employees.
So each council going its own way is there?
Yes.
That's the big takeout.
Yeah, it wasn't because I think any council was desperate and thought they could do it better. It's just no one wanted to take the lead because it was all of the downside and none of the upside.
Yeah, all responsibility.
Yeah, exactly.
No pat on the back.
none whatsoever.
I've been interested to see that there's going to be an expansion of the Curtis Park playground down on the creekland there, new equipment. It's a very popular area and very popular with families and kids, but I guess that was an interesting risk assessment for council. Playground equipment, potential injuries, et cetera, I wonder if council went through that. That was my first question. The second one was, will the expansion impact the market that's held nearby once a month, which is also very popular?
Yes. In terms of risk, I'm sure we did that. I'm not across those details.
Well, that's not your job, of course.
It's not my job, but you know, governments of all stripe seem to run a risk ruler over everything. And so let's say that box is being ticked. Look, the Curtis Park playground extension, this is a real good news story. So we received a grant for about 750, it was a sniff less, I think. We received that grant for $750,000 to expand the playground. And because it's, you know, you go past there every weekend and it's bursting at the seams. And I know I've told this story before, but I'll just sidetrack a little bit in order to give us a pat on the back, and then I'll come back to the right thing. That playground was a testament to a hopeless council and a region that was not of significance. because
you're pushing the agenda a lot,
aren't
you?
Yeah, I am. I am, because I just
a lot of confidence after the win.
Oh, yeah, but rightly so too. It was a region of insignificance, because back 7 or 8 years ago, maybe a bit longer, when that playground was constructed, and the state government went out, and you know there was funding for playgrounds, and if you couldn't make a co-contribution, you got what we have at Curtis Park. That was your $900,000 playground. If you could make a co-contribution, the sky was the limit and the state government would match you. And that's the $7 million playground at Tamworth on the river there. So they put in, the council, Tamworth Council put in $3.5 million, and the government put in $3.5 million. That's the difference between the two. So with Curtis Park, testament to, you know, bare bones council that really is shrinking its way to success. When we went out and we got a grant for $750,000, it was something in the offing, to design it all up and to build it, we designed what it could look like, but that $750,000 wasn't going to cover it, so we were only going to build a portion of it. We went out for public exhibition in July. We got some terrific feedback, particularly from Armidale City Public School. The Year 6 students there wrote in, so one of our officers went up and spoke to them, got some terrific feedback. We've adjusted the plans based on that feedback from the wider community and from the school kids. We're including more water play in there. There's accessibility swings, etc., etc. And council has tapped its asset reserve fund, which used to be empty, but now isn't. We've tapped the asset reserve fund by $600,000 to make sure that it can all be built at once. So that, to me, is what a mature council looks like, and we've finally got there after two decades. And that's what becoming a region of significance looks like. It's not that saving our way to success.
And I thought it was a great idea as well, because, as you say, you see the popularity. I mean, I go down to Coles or whatever, and there's always people there. Yeah. Even on grey and overcast days, there'll be a couple of families down there, kids using it.
That's right. And look, the feedback was great. We got a lot of feedback. We had one fellow who said, don't do anything, don't build things for kids, fix the roads. You know, always good.
Walk and chew gum. Do both.
Do both. Yeah. Kids don't pay rates. Mm. So there we are. But other than that.
But will this impact the market?
Yes, it will. They've liaised with the market. There is still room for the market there. And I'm not sure if they're going to go across the road in Faulkner Street into, you know, towards the service club or not. But they liaise with the market. But yes, it will.
Because we like the market as well.
We do, yeah.
It struck me one evening when I was in town, walking around, the council must have a fairly hefty power bill.
<laughs> It does.
Nighttime made me, obviously, all the lighting, etc., made me aware of that. And council, I thought to myself, will be experiencing the impact of rising power prices just like households do. Now, I understand that councils and big organisations have supply contracts, but there comes a time always when these contracts need to be renegotiated, and I'm not sure what your end date and what your time frame is for that. This was just a thought as I walked around and looked at all the power being used. And I guess when supply contracts are renegotiated, they go up, not down, just like our own personal and private power bills do. What can council do to mitigate against rising increases in power costs? Because I guess ultimately these do have to be passed on to ratepayers. So is this a front of mind issue at the moment?
I thought you'd actually read the business papers there, Paul. Because
no, I hadn't. This came out of my walking around town.
Yeah. Well, I've got some good news for you. So the contract expires on the 30th of December for our large-scale supply contract. We'd gone in on a group buy with some other councils for the one that we're currently in. It looked like, as you said, it was going to go up, so we stepped out of the group and negotiated our own for 100% green power, and our bill's gone down by $500,000.
How can one council on its own do better than the size multiplier of three, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, don't know, but we did. So it's in the council papers. So across, I think it's a a 2 or 3 year period, we're $500,000 less.
Well, that's great news, and that's a nice way to end the conversation. Yeah. So thank you very much. Again, congratulations to you and your team. We will be back in about a month, I guess, and we'll be talking then.
Excellent. Righto. Thanks, Paul. Thank you.